Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kawula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right. Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Kawula. We have an awesome show tonight. I'm very excited. Please welcome guitar master shredder and guitar luthier, Joe Lorien. Say hello, Joe. How are you, man?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course, dude. I wore my Stevie Ray Vaughan guitar shirt.
Oh, I love it.
The last time I remember talking about music, you and I were talking about Stevie Ray Vaughan so much, and I was just like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, I love that you love Stevie Ray Vaughan like I do, and we're going to be friends forever.
That's so amazing. Oh, yes, absolutely.
So you and I used to work at Guitar Center way back in the day, That's where a lot of musicians kind of gravitate, you know, because you're around people that love guitars as much as, you know, every person does that works there. Tell me, before all of that, you know, you kind of got way into music listening to Guns N' Roses. The song or the album or the moment of zen that you were like, stop everything, I want to do music?
It was one evening that a video of Guns N' Roses comes on and is Welcome to the Jungle, and I'm going, what is this? You know, you these crunchy guitars, these vocals are operatic, you know. It really excited me, and it made me go out to my dad's closet and break out the guitar that he's had up there for, you know, 20 some odd years. And
that's awesome.
You know, that was it. That was the moment.
So did you learn like the chords to some of those songs? Were you just like, I've got to know everything that Slash does?
Oh yeah. I started out with Mel Bay, and then I went out and, awesome. for Christmas, I got the tablature books, and that was the thing, you know. To this day, man, it's such an iconic band and guitar player, you know.
And they still are.
Absolutely.
Did you see them on the Appetite for Destruction tour or any of those?
You know, I did not. Over the years, as I went on to play music throughout the strip, I would met up with some of the characters, you know, and at the time, you know, befriended them. You know, now, of course, they're all busy, but I met some of the guys in Guns N' Roses and told them, you know, if it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't be here. You know?
Awesome.
So as you see through Guitar Center, we meet every musician there.
Yes.
And we follow a lot of those connections to this day, you know.
I don't know if you know this, you probably do, but the legend is that Axl and Slash met at Guitar Center in Hollywood. That's what Dave Weiderman told me. He was like, yeah, they met on an ad, and they, on a phone call, said, meet me at Guitar Center in Hollywood. So the very place that you and I worked, that's where it all began for them, dude.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, like I said, that's the place that's magical. And it holds a lot of magic that, you know, that you and I got to encounter that place. And, the stories we can tell, you know, we could probably run the rest of the year.
You know, it's funny you say that, because, like, you know, walking into a room full of guitars, you know, it was just a store before we worked there. And then you start seeing, like, the value of, like, every instrument is going to unlock songs for somebody, or riffs, or it's going to change their lives. And one of my favorite parts of the job that I actually still miss, and, you know, you now work at Guild, so, like, you may not miss this, but it's like opening a brand new guitar and just, like, cleaning it up, tuning it, and putting it up on the wall. That was like Christmas. It was always such a feeling.
Absolutely. So, that smell of it, when you open that case, you know that that person is going to fall in love with it. And that's the thing, Nikki, that I have followed through with over the time of learning to build some of these guitars, is to have that same passion put into it. You know, yeah. when we heard, hey, when you pick up a Party Smith, they're all set up. Well, that's the same idea that I have when I build these guitars. I want someone to pick it up and go, wow. Just like,
you know what? And it's so perfect. It's so perfect that you're building guitars, because you know, I've always noticed, like, I used to listen to you play back in Guitar Center, I'd be like, this guy is ridiculous. He's so talented. And, like, you would just, you know, and you were like very like quiet and just to yourself, and you wouldn't be flashy about it. And you'd be like, let me have that guitar. And then you'd whip out the craziest, flashiest, most amazing musical guitar shredding lick. And I'd be like, oh, that guy can really play, man. Like,
you know, thank you so much. The same thing with you is I see that we have the same passion for music, you know. I put on your video and I'm going, look, there's Nikki right there in his video in Santa Monica, you know, because it's very inspiring. I think music is, it carries different voices and different languages, but it all, in the end, you have that inspiration. And that's the beauty that music has done for both of us and right. many more, you know. It's a fire. I listen to these amazing musicians right now. We have this COVID-19 happening, and all the collaborations people are doing, it's very inspirational. It's very nice, you know.
Well, I'll tell you this, and this is a huge compliment. I know a lot of great guitar players, and I watch every single video where you're playing. I watch every single one. I don't do that with a lot of guitar players.
Oh, wow.
Maybe listen to a couple seconds. I'm like, okay, I got the gist. But with you, I listen to the whole thing. I'm like, God damn, this guy can play. And it's like, you know, I started playing when I was 18. So when I hear a player like you, I'm always like, I got so much work to do. I got to catch up to this. This guy is ridiculous.
Oh no, I'm very flattered. That's very flattering and humbling. Like yourself, man, you're an amazing songwriter.
Thanks, man.
You played to the masses and it brought happiness and smiles. And that's, I think we're doing our job. And that's just something it's very passionate. And all these musicians that we meet, some of them unfortunately leave us at such an early point, but that is inspires us and stays in our heart.
Absolutely. You know? So I want to showcase two sides of you in this interview before we get to the guitars that you built, which I've been checking out and frothing at the mouth to just.
I haven't forgotten yours.
Oh man, dude, your guitars are so amazing. I want to talk about you as the player. So you picked up the guitar at 13. You started learning chords and tablature. When was that moment that you started playing guitar solos? Because I'm just curious, as a guitar fan and a fan of your playing, like, when was the first time you were like, okay, I'm going to start playing killer guitar solos? And what was the band? Because I know you had bands that you played in. Like, what was the moment that you started playing lead guitar?
Oh, you know, I'll tell you, it's actually kind of funny. It started back in high school. I was about 16 years old, and I was so afraid. Now, you remember that guitar for practicing musician, and you open it up, and there's that Shrapnel Records, and there's the Paul Gilberts and the Yngwies.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, no, I'm afraid. I'm afraid to go buy one of these albums. I ain't going to do it. And I didn't do it for about a year or so. Well, lo and behold, a friend of mine goes, hey, I asked him, who is this Yngwie guy? Yngwie, you know? He says, wait till tomorrow. I'll bring you a cassette. Some people may not remember cassettes.
Oh, I remember cassettes.
I popped it in the car, and I my jaw just dropped. I heard the most amazing neoclassical, very fluid playing.
Yeah.
And that's when I said, that's it. No parties. I'm staying home, doing my homework, and I'm going to go learn the licks and learn the stuff. And very few, you know, I said over the years, I know a few little covers, but the one thing that he brought to the ball game was that he says, just improvise. Improvise what's in your heart. Learn what you hear, then change it. And that's the thing that got me is a lot of times I don't play the stuff the same over and over, but he's the guy that lit that fire, you know, under me. And I was blessed over the years to worked with some of the people in his band, and
that's amazing
to have dinner with him, these guys, and the things he goes, yeah, he's just driven. And that's the thing that stuck with me is that, you know, the analogy I tell my wife and I tell a lot of people, I said, you know what, it's like we only eat 3 meals a day, and we're going to make those meals the best meals we can do. Same thing with a performance. You got to make it the best. You got to make it stellar where, you know, you're going to smile and the people will smile, hopefully. And that's been the idea of my plane is make the best 3 meals and make the best plane at that time.
Well, it was amazing that you were that focused at that age, because that's when, you know, you're partying or there's girls or there's just so many things, school. I mean, just so many distractions. I'm always like very humbled when people at that age are like that driven and dedicated to playing guitar, because you know what? I knew I wanted to play at 13, but I didn't start till 18. So it was like, when I know that people started earlier, I'm always like, oh my God, I admire that so much. So how many hours would you practice, like 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 hours? You know,
I'd get home, I'd have my peanut butter and jelly sandwich, a glass of milk, and it'd be on till about, I'd say about 3-4 hours it started out.
Wow.
And then, you know, as time got, you know, I started improving, it went on to about 5 hours, 6 hours. I wish I had that now. I wish I had 10 minutes.
You know, but it's like, it's that time that's invaluable too, because it really is like creating momentum that you never really lose. Like once you, that's the coolest thing about guitar. As long as you keep picking it up, which I know you do, mm-hmm. that those years and that time that you put in, you that's still like under your belt. Like you don't lose that unless you stop playing guitar.
No, that's true. You know, it's what's really inspiring for many, many years is I just get this drum software, and it has all types of drum kits from Neil Peart's drum set, recreated. But I try playing a reggae feel or a funk feel. Something outside of the usual element of hard rock or rock is really fun to do, and it really, really keeps stuff fresh in my head, you know. So I, you know, like I said, those 3 meals, right now is those 10 minutes or 20 minutes I have a day. Now that I have kids, it's a different transformation as a musician. It's still there. I mean, 30 plus years of playing, now it's time to influence those that are right next door. You know,
do they play instruments?
Mind you, this is my 19-month-old's tool of the day to help me put a neck together on a guitar box. So I hid it from him.
So they're too young to play right now. They're
too young, but he, you know, they think they can build a guitar at 19 months. So someone's trying to beat me.
Tell me, so I know you were a Strat guy, and you're still a Strat guy, I know. Which is great, because Strats are like my favorite instruments. I still always come back to the Strat as like, okay, this is like the meat and potatoes of all rock and roll and all music. It's never going to go out of style. It's always going to be an important instrument. Tell me what drew you to that guitar. What players drew you to that guitar?
Yeah, Steve Ray Vaughan. You have your Steve Ray Vaughan. You had your Yngwie, Jeff Beck. These guys, all of them, very fluid players. And just the Strat is this, it just fits the body. You know, we have that contour.
Yeah.
And of course, I choose maple because it's very unforgiving. You know, if there's a mistake, people are going to hear it.
And what are your favorite pickups on the Strat?
I like, believe it or not, very low output vintage pickups. I like this one, actually. The hottest is this actually has some 70s pickups, 70s hand wound pickups that were hand wound for me. But generally, I use a lot of vintage type 50s pickups. 60s pickups, kind of like Hendrix. Those are my favorites, like 69s, stuff like that. And amplifier, I let the amplifier do all the work, you know, when it comes to tone. When you have that volume, oh, let me see, I'll pan it over a little bit. Over here, please. They have a Plexi style amp, and that, I mean, almost 100 watts. It's all air and tone that comes out through it. So that's the real. The real thing is pairing a guitar and amplifier together, and then you do the rest of the work, you know? with your fingers.
Do you have an amp of choice that you love to pair with your Strat?
Right now, it's the these amps. They're all hand wired in Minnesota by a guy named Maurice Skolke called Vintage Voltage. It's his take on the Hendrix amp.
And
it's all hand wired. I mean, it takes again the same passion that I do when I build a guitar into him building these amps. I actually gave him a call last week and said, "Hey, I ordered one of your amps. Wow. Tell me a little bit about it." And he was just very passionate. And I said, "Man, I just can't wait to get it." I fired it up for about 10 minutes, and it's just an amazing sound. It really inspires you to have an amplifier that's hand built with the same passion that we have towards playing. So that's the thing, is really like those plexi type amps. And then the bottom, the week before that, it's going to sound like a gluttonous person, but is the Black Star Artisan 100.
These are all great amps, dude.
They do not let you make mistakes. Their amplifiers, they reward you, and they will spit back at you if you mess up.
Let's get a little nerdy. So what's the size of the speaker in each of the amps?
You know, currently I'm using an old Laney, actually a mid-90s Laney 212. My usual cabinets that I have, and because it's pandemic, I can't go pick it up, is I use 212s with vintage 30s.
Okay.
They have a beautiful, creamy sound to them. The backup on that is also a 412 my brain is melted. It's got, you know, they're selections. They're you know, a beautiful speaker. I mean, you got to find the old ones that they're made in England. But I mean, they're still a beautiful sounding speaker to me. You know, using the greenbacks and the the other one just escapes me. 25 watts.
It sounds like does it have a lot of headroom, or does it break
up?
It's
got a lot of headroom. They have a lot of beautiful headroom. This one has a push pull. This is called the Vintage Voltage Moplex. Maurice has added a push pull master volume, which is really nice. And so it has these beautiful. You're basically a singing tone. Think Jimi Hendrix.
He's one of my all-time faves. I know he's one of yours. If you like Steve Ray Vaughan,
absolutely.
The two that are always.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we weren't able to be there at that time. We were able to listen to the sounds through our CDs and through you know, the Amazon Music or through you know, Apple iTunes. But with these amps, it recreates the things we don't hear. That air that it pushes through.
Yes.
All that beautiful tone and feedback that we don't hear on those albums. But I mean, the tonality comes through fairly well through the albums. I mean, obviously inspired at millions. So this is what I've wanted for many, many, many years. I've gone through a lot of amplifiers, from my Marshalls to everything. But I've landed to the basics of a Marshall sound in a handmade amplifier, a Strat sound from a handmade Strat. You know,
no pedals.
As you know, I've seen some of your instruments and that beautiful acoustic. We just can't run down to the nearest Bonds and pick up a little guitar on the shelf or something. We have to have the right tools, you know, for the job.
You don't use any overdrive pedals, no fuzz pedals.
Oh, you know what? I do cheat a little bit. I do, and again, I use Tech 21's Hot Rod Plexi for just a little bit of drive when I'm in the bedroom. But when I play out live, it's just all au naturel.
Oh, wow. No pedal. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, because it gives that nice drive. I just run that up. But at home, I have this beautiful, it adds all that beautiful drive that you have when you're cranking that sucker up, but at bedroom levels. And this is the only little box that I use. I mean, when I get the occasion, I'll use a little bit of delay, a little bit of reverb, but the only foot pedal is this. In the future, I may add a wah and stuff like that, but I'm very simplistic in my playing. I try not to color it up too much.
That's awesome. Is that because you want the detail in the notes that you're playing?
Yes. Now, when we hit the studio, we can go ahead and add the choruses and stuff like that. But when we're at home, is basically that, just or we're playing out just that little pedal does the job. Other than that, just a cable, guitar, and an amp, and we're ready to go. You know.
And just so our listeners can hear you play something, why don't you play one of your guitars, and then we'll start talking about your guitars.
Sure, sure, okay.
Awesome, dude.
I see all the little sweep picking that you're doing.
Yeah,
I love that. Dude, you're such a badass. You've always been a badass. Do you still listen to players? Like, I find that, like, the better I get as a guitarist, I listen back to old records. Like, I listen to old Jimi Hendrix records now, and I hear more things that I never heard in the details of what he was playing that kind of blow my mind even more now.
Oh, absolutely. I go back to the old classics. Anything I can get a hold of, a bootleg album. Larkin Poe has just been blowing me away. Amazing musicians and the talent they have. And that just really, they really take that level of what they learned and then bring it up a notch or a couple of notches, you know. That's really inspiring to see someone like that, you know. As music, I tend to want to hear new bands. And I think they've got it right now. There's a few other cats out there that you know, people are saying they're plagiarizing Led Zeppelin, but you know, we all have our take on it.
I know you're
only
talking
seven
about
notes in a scale.
Right. Well, it's funny. I saw Greta Van Fleet. I know that's the band. I saw him at Coachella, and I was like, wow, this is like a sound that sounds like Zeppelin without the unbelievably great songs that Zeppelin, like Zeppelin just had tone, song, everything. That band had a lot of the same things in the right direction, but they just don't have that same charisma and that same thing that I love about Led Zeppelin that becomes timeless. Like, you hear the drum sounds or the guitar sounds from Led Zeppelin, and it just, like, there's no band that comes close to that. There's still no bands that come close to that.
You know, I love the old Ferrari Dinos and old school technology back in the day when Ferrari, you know, back in the 60s and 70s. And I love a Ferrari now. So it's not to take away from an older band or a newer band. It's just interpretations and inspirations and influences. And I think that they're doing great at it. I think they're doing fantastic. I think they don't get the credit. And another one was who was it? Rival Sons. We had the singer come by through Guild, and just to see his face, saying, "Wow, this is what you guys build." That's such an inspiration to see someone who comes through who's a great player and an up and coming band to say that about what we build. You know, I mean, I can't build acoustics here at home, but at work, what we the whole team does is we all pitch together and build a guitar, an iconic guitar that from any player can play, you know. But we, these that are out there, are playing our jumbos and our D55s and our M20s. It's really neat to see that the hands they land on, from the guy who plays, you know, in front of the Niagara Hemp Store, who has a Guild, or the guy who's out there playing arenas playing a Guild. It's really neat to see.
Well, it's
a
very specific sound, too. It's like you can never go wrong with a Guild. They've always been a staple. They've been a staple, especially with acoustic guitars. It's just like, dude, there are very few guitars that have that kind of legacy. Guild is one of them because they've been around. They've been part of the fabric of all these great albums and songs and, you know, legendary sounds. So you're with a great company, you know?
Yeah, we don't cut corners. And like I said, the one thing right now that I'm missing is missing being there. you know, in time we'll get there. I'll get to go back in and start building them. But, you know, there is no corners cut. There is no, okay, they're cranking them out in one day. No, our jumbos take roughly around 12 days before you even make it out of the factory. You know, we take that much care and that the finishes are done, that everything is up to par. It's an amazing, it also inspires me to build the way it should be. You know, there's no cutting corners with a nut or not gluing it or gluing it. It has to be right. You know, there's some, like today I built a double neck that I parted out into pieces because it wasn't going to make the cut. Wow. I thought about it, drank iced tea over it, and we ended up partying it out, and which was little by little turned into this, which you saw on Facebook.
I just saw that today. I was like, dude, it's such a cool looking guitar, man. I mean, everything about it, it's like, it's ridiculous.
It's got the stainless steel. It's all maple quarter sawn. Your shower locking tuners. I'm not much of a Floyd guy, but I thought I'd have it. But I'm going to block it just to have it, you know. So it's kind of a throwback to the 80s. But, you know, no corners cut. Everything it has to be top notch because the guy who's playing it, I don't want him to break a string. I don't want the volume pot to be too stiff or too loose, you know. So everything goes into detail. And that's really rewarding when I've seen some people just pick up my guitar and says, oh, my God, I got one of your guitars. You know, it was amazing. Are you going to build another one like that? I said, no. Everything is a one-off.
That's awesome.
Everything is a one-off.
That gives a little bit of a story to the guitars. That's what I love.
Yeah. I mean, I took the idea of a 50s Strat, and it was aged, but it has all the 50s wound pickups. The difference changes here in the neck is you have a nice, full, beefy neck with a scallop, too, on this one. But it has that tonality of the 50s sound, but modernized with a nice scalp fingerboard for that beautiful vibrato. And that was an influence, but it turned out to be something doesn't make you play fast. That's the last thing I think about is about playing fast. It's about projecting the note.
Sound, feel, and tone.
The sound, and most of all, the vibrato is just amazing on those scallops.
Are all the scales of the neck, I assume they're all different and custom?
They're all different. On majority of ones that I built are 25 and a half. And then, like, this is a different one. This one's actually, you know how you usually have your maple neck rosewood fingerboard or maple neck, maple fingerboard? This one's the opposite. This is rosewood neck.
Oh, wow. It's
maple fingerboard.
That's cool.
This is what I call the pandemic guitar. This one started out as an eBay special. You know, this is actually one of the first run of Warmoth. I don't know how old that it would be, 30 years, 20, 25 years, 30 years, body. This is the first run that they did on a single cut. It had numerous thick finishes, and I said, you know what, I'm going to sand and scrape and scrape. Yeah, and this is the first one during our COVID-19 pandemic that was a mahogany with a nice maple cap. This one's a 24 and 3 quarters, flame maple, locking tuners, and the Schroeder bridge. Very lightweight for what it is.
It doesn't look like they're humbuckers, though, right?
These are hand-wound humbuckers.
Oh, wow. Like I
say, it's a guy named Chris Carter's Sin Pickups that he makes these hand-wound pickups. These are the actual slash pickups. That's what Slash uses.
But
his version of them hand wound, and they have a beautiful singing tone, PAF type tone, that lets that amplifier just do its job without getting choked up by a high output pickup. Now, I'm not against high output pickups, but for my flavor is a nice PAF. Though occasionally another local guy, Mark Kane out in L.A., this is a Mr. Scary pickup on this one. This is another throwback to the George Lynch days, maple body.
That's one volume. Dude, how many guitars do you have? I think I've always wanted to ask.
I don't know. If my wife can hear this. There's probably about 15 lying around here. There's about five. I discovered four under the bed. three in the closet, another three in this closet. So I think about 14, 15.
Wow.
How many I've had? I think I counted in the last 30 plus years of playing a little over 350 guitars.
And so what, you've sold them over the years and just...
They, over the years they got sold and it's come to, I think these are the ones that, what I say, these are the keepers. These right. are the ones that over all those ideas and all those mistakes and or non-mistakes, I've come up with these pieces, these tribute pieces. And these are the keepers. These, like, this is another one that, another beautiful telly. I prefer ash most of the time. Most of these are ash.
That's beautiful.
And maple top. This is a beefy fat back with a brass nut, locking tuners, and a beautiful hand-tooled pickguard by M.K. Holloway.
That's awesome.
You can find them out in, on Etsy. But all, you know, something that's just easy to play. I've always been against those toggles. I mean, hitting a toggle switch on a telly. I did a lot of this. So the toggle switch on this. So it's the take on a traditional body style with a lot of modern ideas and modern things. On like some of these volume pots are made by Burns, which are a nice tip to just quick volume opening close. So that's my take on some of these guitars. Big frets on most of these, but some of the vintage ones have the smaller fret just to keep it kind of true.
And you change like the thickness of the neck. Do you like you like a thinner neck, a thicker neck? It depends on the axe for me, but I love a big, like almost like a big trunk of a tree for my guitar neck.
That's why we're doing this. I love a big baseball neck. Like I said, I just think this one has a nice, big, huge neck. Most of the guys are like, "Well, these are huge necks." Well, these are my personal ones, but and this one is just a standard thin, kind of like an American standard with C shape. But I personally prefer a beefy baseball neck. Les Paul's nice fat 50s neck. My Strat's big, huge. Because I believe that more wood, more tone. You know?
I agree. And you see, like when a guitar is aged, tell us a little bit about that process, because not a lot of people know how a guitar is aged. I know it's a machine that basically puts like the wear and tear and kind of opens up the fibers in the wood a little bit, but kind of go into that a little bit as to how a guitar can be aged.
Sure, absolutely. Well, the process of aging is, the wood is aging as time goes, as we're talking, it's aging. But when you're vibrating these strings, this sonically recording those vibrations into this wood. Now, why a lot of some of these pieces, you see a lot of natural ones, I've had more. My choice in many of them have been to use like a tin oil. So you have a natural vibration. It vibrates more than having it painted. Most of these coats can be 8 to 10 coats of
lacquer,
right? Cellulose or poly. And that could slow down the aging process. But the true aging is really done by playing it. You can't. Some people, you can find a 1950s Les Paul in a closet that's never been played. It's not going to sound like a 1970s Les Paul that's been played every day, every night in the show, because it's been the strings and vibrations, much like a speaker, get aged through that vibration. That's the true process of vibration. Mind you, that the tree's been sitting, how long it's been sitting on in the land and then chopped down, it also plays a part into it. But for the most part, I try to keep the necks all natural for that aging of the neck also. So the true thing to age it is play it.
Yeah.
Play it. You know,
well, that's your funny thing too, is most people don't realize like guitars are like living, breathing things. It's something that does age. It does open up. It sounds better over time because everything is becoming more open in the instrument, warmer. I just love that about it. It's like it grows with you. And I find that with my own instruments.
Oh, yes. Yeah, especially acoustics. I mean, a lot of acoustics, when you take some of the entry levels that have that laminate top, it may sound great. It's going to sound good. But that's as best it's going to sound as a top.
Right.
Because we're sandwiched wood with glue and wood. Not to take away from it, it's fine. But when you reach a level of all solid or mostly solid, you know that instrument's going to age and it's going to change, much like a voice. You take some of our early musicians that when they're in their teens or in their 20s, and now that they're reaching 40s and 50s and 60s, that voice has gotten so, it's matured. And it has, I mean, I can't sing for life of me, but I can tell it when you as a singer also, you can tell that age yep. is really giving you that richness in your voice. So much like that, it just use it. It's use the instrument, use the voice, and that's what gets you, like, through life, you know. If you live through life, you got to experience life and keep going and experiencing.
Give me chills, man. This is like prophetic, dude. I love it. I got to ask you a question as a guitar fan. So when you're making these guitars and you make a perfect instrument, like I'm sure you do 10 out of 10 times, how do you give it away to, like, sell it? Like, you know, I'm sure you've brought home a couple that you've actually made and just said, this one's coming home. I gotta get this. But how do you, I mean, when you're there from every part of the phases and you see it go from, you know, just a big block of wood to it being this beautiful instrument, how do you let it go and just put it into the world?
That, you know, it's like raising children. I told my wife, you know, we're going to raise them now. We have them. If there's going to be a point where you have to let them free. Sometimes it isn't selling them. Sometimes you find that person who's really has a fire. And I remember I working for the Boys and Girls Club shortly after I left Guitar Center in North Hollywood. And these kids were hungry for music. And I donated, I think, about 5 guitars to them because they were just hungry to play. And same thing with electrics is, if you find the player, I was lucky. I mean, I grew up here in Oxnard, where Guild is now. And a young kid, poor kid, wanted to learn guitar. And a neighbor gave me the chance and gave me an amplifier. Didn't charge me for it. Gave me another amp and a guitar. And I remember that sometimes you got to let go and see what else sprouts up. You know, sometimes it's a young kid who has, like we did, learned a band and was excited, but the money's not there. Sometimes you go, hey, you know what? His kid's hungry. I'm going to go ahead and let him have an instrument.
That's because awesome.
We never know. We dude, never know where it goes. Dude,
that's amazing. That's amazing you know? To do that.
It's sometimes you have to think back and go, hey, let them, I want to hear their voice one day.
Well, it's also like giving back. It's like, it's one of the reasons I teach. It's like, no matter how far I go in my career, I love, like, throwing back to kind of bring up another generation on concepts or just to give back, because you know that you know, we all had people like you did that helped us get that growth and kind of light that fire. So the best thing you can give to somebody is light that fire within them to see where you can take them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, over the years of teaching, I've had a couple students who go, hey, Joe, my band is, this is when MTV had videos. He goes, well, they played our video on MTV. Or I had another guy who I gave him a couple lessons to. He's endorsed by an amazing guitar company. They're out in like Norway or something like that. But I mean, going, dude, it was all you, man. It was all you to get you going, that you got yourself an endorsement for this guitar company. So it's we just give them that little bit of fire. And they take that fire and let it grow into something amazing.
So, tell us a little bit about, like, when you first started wanting to build a guitar. I read in your bio that you were staring at your 2 guitars in Pasadena. And then yep. like, bam, let's combine, let's change the next. Tell me about that story and that catalyst that made you want to build guitars.
Sure. I think it took a little bit of, I think it, I was, I had thought about it before, but I think it took a beer or two to just finally get the screwdriver and swap them out and get them all lined up and re-drill the holes. So it was kind of scary to do, but I knew weeks before that I had to swap it out and experiment. I think when we improvise in our music and improvise with things we're comfortable with, it's nice to break out of that mold, what we're comfortable with. And like I said, I sold all my amps a couple months ago. I sold all my amps, and I just had guitar amp software. And I said, okay, I'm going to invest in buy some bodies and buy some necks. And that's how I ended up with Ease. Well, the time came that the pandemic was happening. I said, I'm going to need a little more than amp software. I sought out some amps. So I think what it is just breaking out of that mold of comfort zone and see where we land, you know. So that's the thing that got me going is this. Got to keep changing every day. Like it's mentioned, making 3 good meals a day. I learned how to cook, so because no one's going to feed you and know what your mouth likes more than you do. Same thing.
I'm sure also, like, you know, when we worked at Guitar Center, what was so great about the job was you learned about so many guitars that you may not have had access to. Now that you're building guitars, you've probably learned even more details of things you like or pickups you like, or even the scales of the neck, or even, you know, just the tuners, whatever it is. It could be the smallest detail, but those things are important to help you find exactly what you want out of an instrument.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, when every guitar that we'd open up, I'd experiment, I would be fine-tuned, looking at the tuners, what they put on there. Did they put a bone nut, or did they put a plastic nut, or a GrafTech? And it's been like that since mid-90s. I had gotten my start. I started in the music industry and retail in about 94 at a small guitar shop here in Ventura. And every guitar that came through, I he's like, okay, I'm going to teach you how to set it up. And I was scared. Well, you know what, 1,000, 2,000 guitars later, I learned how to do the setups and knowing everything that I built, I'm going to intonate it and make sure it's going to sound, the note that you're pressing down is going to be right. So everything down, starting from that, sandwiching the woods together, the pickups, and then once you set it up, that's the final thing is, okay, how's it going to play? How's it going to sound? How's it going to play? So yeah, no, it's been a long journey and continues to be a long journey. Today I was building I left it on the other room, a Strat with a fretless fingerboard. And oh, did I battle till I got that thing intonated right? And I was, you know, the bad side is that I'm going, if I don't build this right, I'm going to part it out and we're going to start all over. So
that's the perfection.
I'm glad it worked out.
now, let me ask you about, like, shaping is a real big part of guitar building. It's probably one of the most important parts. Tell me what that process was for you when you were building and learning to shape guitars, learning all the different aspects of building guitars. Like, what was the part that made you fascinated the most with all of it?
You know, it's the comfort. And I start off with the neck and shaping the neck, the edges. You know, a lot of players say, oh, I want that broken in feel. I start out with, when the neck, I start out with a certain grade of sandpaper, and then go as fine as, you know, over a 1,000 grit till it gets really fine. All the frets are smooth. But also what it has done, I've gotten rid of those sharp edges on the neck. On the guitars too, same thing with like this one. I needed to have something that was not very sharp. You know, this is all wood. I wanted to round it all down so where it's comfort. You feel comfortable. Something that you've had for years. And I think that's the most important part. And when you are working with a body or a neck, is to find those little comfort spots that it's going to bug them. It's going to feel kind of sharp, and it's to smooth it out as if it's been with them for years. That's the real trick is into doing it, especially with neck. You know, you don't want to be running your hand up and down feeling sharp frets. But then I also, what you want to do, like I said, I round out that little bit of fingerboard very lightly to where it feels broken in. Because you want an instrument to be part of you, not just something you bought, you know, down before, which is still great. I mean, there's amazing instruments that are store-bought. They're right out of the box. They're amazing. But I think my interpretation is what I try to bring to the instrument when building one, just to make sure that it feels like it's been with you for years.
I think that's one of the biggest selling points of a guitar is like how the neck feels. I think I've probably bought maybe 90% of my guitars based on how the neck feels. You know, it's like it all lines up eventually, but I would say the neck feel of a guitar is probably 90% of what I'm looking for when I know it's destined for it, you know?
Absolutely. It has to feel like kind of when you grab an English muffin or a bagel and you spread nice fresh churned butter on it. And that's how it feels. That's, you know, like I said, it has to feel, I'm going,
Funny, it's kind of like a pet. It's like the guitar chooses you, you know, and it's like once you kind of like make that bond, you know, like, okay, that's it. That's got to be like a kind of a heavy responsibility that you all put on yourselves just to make fine instruments, because it you know, everybody's magic or their magnetic connection to the instrument, it's all going to be different. So how do you kind of like vary degrees of scales or things to kind of cater to what you think the unknown buyer is going to like?
Oh, you know, it's trial and error. And many times, like I said, I had that double neck that I had for 3 months, and it just, that day canceled. Not, you know, because you want to give them that excitement that you feel.
Yeah.
Back to them. You know, I was at a local guitar center a couple months ago, and this guy was playing a beautiful, well-known neck shaper. I don't know if I could mention the name Carruthers.
Yes, you can.
Amazing. Carruthers of Carruthers guitar. And he was playing it, and I go, that's an amazing guitar that has the name that carries on a skill set and a passion of building the instrument.
Right.
And he goes, play it. I said, no, just, you know, you play it and you feel it. He goes, no, really, play it. 30 seconds later, he goes, I'm going to buy it. I he's spending, you know, $3,000 on a guitar, almost $3,000 on a guitar. I go, the way you project and talk about an instrument or even people, you know, is how it's going to excite people. So the good thing is I get excited about building a guitar, and if I'm not feeling like working on it, it's just not going to happen. But it's when I go, oh wow, this is butter. I know they're gonna like it, because you're gonna, you know, put it in their hands and see your excitement, and it's gonna work for them. And, some people want something special. I'll go, yeah, if that's what you want, we'll go ahead and work with it, and I'll get your excitement that you have for what you like, and we'll take it that notch. You know,
I want you to play. So this instrument is one of the instruments you built, correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah, this is my Blackie.
Oh, I love it. A little Clapton reference. I love it. Dude, he's my favorite. He's still one of my favorite. Steve Ray Vaughan is my favorite. Clapton's still my favorite living guitarist.
Oh, yes. Oh, we have Clapton, and we cherish Clapton. I mean, the notes, the song structure, the singing. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. It's that churned butter on a nice toast.
You know? So I want to have you just play some chords just so people can hear the guitars, and then I want you to play some riffs or some licks.
Let me flip this on here and clean it up a little bit more.
No problem.
We'll just do it as is. So this one is. And that's just a neck pickup. But got a little bit of bite. It's kind of a 50s. I'm sorry, 70s. A little bit of bite, kind of 70s bite on the single coil. So this one was built kind of a little bit non-traditional than I'm used to, with those higher output 70s pickups. Again, breaking out of that the norm, as opposed to like some of the 50s and lower output pickups that I'm used to building. So this one was kind of an experiment, again, with the Rosewood.
Great.
Fingerboard.
Sounds great. It looks like the scale of the neck is a little bit longer than most straps, but maybe that's just the video camera.
It's, I think it just it looks like it, but this is a standard strap, 25.5. I like to keep the bridges right on the body, so I put all the springs on this one. So
that's awesome.
It's going to be as resonant as possible. And that's another thing that I take into consideration is when I'm putting blocks on them. I usually prefer brass blocks to get add that warmth to really work with the pickups that I put in there. This one, I think I just found something in a, one of the drawers and put it on there.
For curiosity, what gauge strings do you use?
You know, I use kind of a hybrid. I use 10 through 52. Oh, so nice. I have, you know, your gauge high E is a gauge 10, and my bass string is a 52. I tune them down a half step like Hendrix, because Strats, as you know, you're playing those suckers with that much gauge.
Right.
I unfortunately, my fingers will bleed like the T-Ray. But I prefer a good low end. This one is tuned down a half step or full step. I don't know why. I think it just sat there. I think the cat sat on it and just I heard D.
Well, you know, it's such a curiosity to me because, like, you know, we both know Stevie Ray Vaughan played 13s. That's like a legendary thing. But, you know, like I heard Billy Gibbons. We played a festival in Milwaukee, and they were one of the headliners. And I heard him play. I heard Billy Gibbons play. It's the best guitar tone I've heard in a very, very long time. And he plays eights. He plays eights.
Yeah.
Which I'm That's like, amazing. How That's- could you get that tone by playing eights? It's,
you know,
it's crazy.
Something in the finger. He might have pre-aged his fingers, I think what it is. Some of the best players I've seen heard also, I think like Inge uses a 52 or something like that and uses a gauge 8 for a high string.
Wow.
Another friend of mine also, same thing, he plays, he's a really well-known restoration and repair guy, Tracy Longo here in town, and he's the repair guy to the Stars. Well, he played in a Led Zeppelin tribute band, and he was using 8s.
Wow.
And this amazing tone that they get is in the fingers, but I'm afraid of using 8s.
I was using 10s for the longest time. I still have 10s on a lot of my guitars, but I've been using 11s on most of my guitars that I play the most, and I actually prefer 11s now, but I also wonder if I'm making it harder on myself. So every now and then I'll go back to 10s and I'm like, oh my God, this is just so fast. I don't know why I don't put every guitar with 10s. But then when I go back to 11s, it kind of like, especially with bends, I don't know what it is about bends. When I make a bend on using an 11, it's like I put my whole body into it a little bit more because it's a little bit more difficult. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, it is. And many times it gives you that reward because it strengthens your fingers and it really just lets you try to, they've used the term fighting the instrument, but you do in a way. But it's very rewarding. Again, kind of like using maple. It's a very bright wood and dense wood, but if you play those notes, it's gonna help you become a better player because you're aware of little nuances and mistakes. You know, not to take away from rosewoods, which I love very much, and maples and all that stuff. Like ebonies and stuff like that. But it just, for me, it's a preferred choice on a lot of the guitars are maple. So it really just tries to bring out the best in you.
And you guys do all the woods for guitars? Do you do redwood, cedar, all of those as well? Or do you do
most? I use redwood. It's a beautiful, very nice, mellow tone wood. It's very hard to work with when you're sanding. As I've noticed when I do it, I've gotten cracks in the wood. So I call it, what do they call it, like rustic or like barncaster. It's a barncaster. But no, they're beautiful. Every wood has their personality, and I think to me, I enjoy using ash. I just heard that Fender's going to stop using ash because the quality of ash, or because there's been a lot of, I guess, natural disasters have kind of really brought down the stock of good ash. But I've used, as I said, I like alder. I have a couple guitars that I built out of alder. I've used maple in some of them. Maple can get kind of heavy, so that one is kind of, I have to weigh it out and see how it sounds, because it can get kind of brittly in some cases. So, you know, I usually play the guitar. I before I even wire it up, I actually string it up and listen to what the wood is telling me. And I know what kind of pickups I'm going to use, because it basically looks like a microphone. Right. You know, what are you amplifying? Are you amplifying something really bright or something really mellow? So
that's like a huge factor for me when I buy a guitar. It's like, what are the woods? Because almost every guitar I have is made of like some different combination of woods. I've got an acoustic guitar that a luthier named James Goodall made for me, and it's made with sinker redwood, which is a redwood tree that's been sitting in the bottom of a riverbed for over 100 years. Wow. So all of the mineral deposits are like crazy, and it makes the wood denser, and it's the best sounding acoustic guitar I've ever played because of these other legendary folklore parts of it. But, you know, there's also, I love spruce for an acoustic. I love mahogany for a guitar, for electric guitars. I love maple. I love rosewood. I love, you know, there's every part of every guitar has a degree of an ingredient that I'm looking for to get out of the guitar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A really big factor most people take for granted.
Yes, we want that big box of crayons. You know, all woods have their qualities and inspire something in us. We all, like I said, some days we feel like having sushi, some days we feel like having a salad, and all of them play a special part in what is we create. I think if you take that beautiful girl guitar and start strumming, you're going to get inspiration from those woods and the craftsmanship. So now that's.
And while you're working at Guild, what is your favorite body style to make?
To this day, the jumbo. Now,
I was hoping you'd say that. I have a jumbo spruce. Yeah.
Yeah, the jumbo spruce that we like our 512. Our jumbo is a beautiful. It has the back, the way they shape it, has a different type of bracing system. It's hard to explain it, and the way we shape it is a combination of certain woods like your flame maples and other ones to give it that stability, where there's all you're going to do is when you strum that, you're going to have nothing in between the vibration. It's just all wood, and just strumming one of those is just a beautiful, amazing guitar.
It's got a big sound. It's got such a big sound.
Beautiful sound. Yes, absolutely. And the whole process into building those are the most time consuming that to build, because we on those also, when it comes to finishing, we use that using a nitrous cellulose, you know, so that's going to let that wood breathe very naturally with all the combination. It's the most curious ones. We were allowed to have a few people go into work. I think they're allowing like 10 people. So my concern when I walked in there, I had to get some paperwork. But my concern was, oh no, I left a couple of jumbos in the press. Are they going to be okay? You're okay. Go home. You're okay. They're fine. But it's a beautiful guitar to work with. All of them are beautiful to work with, but those are the most special to me.
Well, where can people find Guild? What's the website for Guild Guitars? Let us know.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it's just Guild Guitars. It's in conglomeration with, I'm sorry, it's getting dry, so no lemonade, see. The Cordova Guitar Company brought back Guild Guitars a few years ago and brought it from out in New Haven, Connecticut, I believe. And they brought them here to Oxford. You know, Fender had sold the company. And,
yeah, I remember Fender bought them like when we were working.
Yeah, Cordova brought them back and brought them here in Oxnard, which is a nice climate. It's a nice climate control. Cordova, we're all of like, you know, 15 running steps across from Cordova. We have also in-house right now we're building our master series Cordobas at Guild. So we have that inspiration to another beautiful instrument for most classical players. No counters are cut to building these guitars because we want anyone to play them and be, you know, inspired.
Well, when all this dies off, I'd love to come and take
a look. You gotta come.
You were invited.
Yes.
I've been to a couple guitar factories, and it's like a winter wonderland for any musician. You know this. Seeing the it's like going backstage and seeing how these beautiful instruments are made. So I'm gonna hold you to that.
No, absolutely. You're more than welcome to come. I would love to have you. We'd love to guest you at Guild and have you come do a walkthrough Guild and even Cordoba. See how you know. Sausage is made here in Oxnard.
That's right. Well, it's my honor. Joe, thank you for taking the time tonight to talk about guitars and talk about all the nerdy things that I love about that instrument more than anybody. So I really appreciate your time and keep doing what you're doing, man, because people are noticing. I notice. I watch all your videos. I watch every guitar that you make.
Thank you.
I'm so like thrilled that you're doing it because you know that you have the passion. And there's nobody that we want more than people are passionate about making instruments.
Yes, sir.
Our instruments, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
As a community, you know. So thank you for doing what you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. It's wonderful hearing from you again. And you'll be coming here as soon as this says.
You will, I'm holding you to that. It's on tape, man.
It's a pinky promise.
Pinky promise. Great to catch up with you, man. Thank you so much again for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. And we'll have to do another one in a couple months and see what
you're doing. Absolutely. Love to be back.
Well, stay safe and be healthy and lots of love and light to your family, okay?
Thank you. Likewise. Thank you. Take care.
All right, bro. Be good.
Awesome. All right. Take care.